Now, what do we retain? What remains as the residuum of this twofold suspension? In the first epoch, we put in brackets that it is to say we do not deny but simply suspend judgment on scientific truth and scientific validity. What remains as the residuum is A, the entire general structure of the empirical reality. Footnote 16, text, the infinite manifold of things in time and space, the altar, and B, the world itself, in which all these things necessarily appear. The world as the universal, unsurpassable horizon of all particular objects. But this first epoch is not sufficient. It cannot do what it is supposed to do, namely break through the mystification and uncover the ultimate foundation of scientific truth. It cannot do this because of this first bracketing. We are still on the basis, auf dem Boden, of the empirical reality within the natural position of our day-to-day experience. A second epoch is necessary, which at one stroke leads to a total alteration of the natural position of experience to the suspension of the natural validation of everything that we naturally accept as valid in our immediate experience. Footnote 17, text. Once we have suspended these judgments too, we reflect no longer on the pre-given world and the particular objects appearing in it, but on how these objects appear and the modes in which this entire world is given to us. The residuum of this epoch is thus the world as correlate of a totality of modes of consciousness, as a synthetic totality. What we have now as residuum is the transcendental subjectivity, footnote 18, text, and to this transcendental subjectivity the world is now given as a phenomenon of and for an absolute subjectivity. Footnote 19, text. This transcendental subjectivity is no longer any particular or individual or group subjectivity. It is absolute because whatever object or object relation may appear now appears as necessarily constituted in specific acts of synthesis which inseparably link objectivity and subjectivity. Page 475. In other words, we have now what we might call the absolute original experience, the experience which is at the origin of and is constitutive of any possibly objectivity that can ever become the object of scientific and any other sort. The phenomenological reduction has now opened the dimension in which the original and most general structure of all objectivity is constituted. I shall add only a few critical remarks. The breakthrough to the transcendental subjectivity is supposed to be the road to uncover the foundation on which all scientific validity rests. I ask the question, can the reductive phenomenological analysis ever attain its goal, namely to go behind scientific and pre-scientific validity and mystification? I shall offer three suggestions. First, the phenomenological analysis is confronted with the fact of reification. Husserl does not use this term. Reification is a form which is usually not examined. Scientific as well as pre-scientific experience are false, incomplete, inasmuch as they experience as objective, material, or ideational, that in reality is subject-object, objectification, or subjectivity. In founding the analysis on the constitutive subject-object correlation, Husserl's dual epoch does go beyond the reification, but so does all transcendental idealism. Thus far, we are, in my view, in no way beyond Kant. I know Husserl's own interpretation of the difference between phenomenology and Kant, I think that in the context of my criticism, this difference is not very relevant. My point is that the phenomenological breakthrough stops short of the actual constituent subjectivity. Husserl transcends the objective a priori of science in the first epoch and the empirical a priori in the second epoch. He thus creates a conceptual meta-language for the critical analysis of the empirical reality. But my question is, does this conceptual meta-language really come to grips with the constituent subjectivity? I think not. Second, the phenomenological reduction arrives at a subjectivity which constitutes only the most general forms of objectivity. For example, the general form of appearing as object, changing as object, being related to other objects. But does this subjectivity give us manifest reason behind the disguising reason, the validation of scientific truth? Can this transcendental subjectivity ever explain and solve the crises of European science? Husserl's transcendental subjectivity is again a pure cognitive subjectivity. One does not have to be a Marxist in order to insist that the empirical reality is constituted by the subject of thought and of action, theory and practice. Page 476. Husserl recognizes the historical subject in its sinngebende Leistung, but then by suspending, bracketing it, the phenomenological analysis creates its own a priori, its own ideation, and its own ideological veil. Pure philosophy now replaces pure science as the ultimate cognitive lawgiver, establishing objectivity. This is the hubris inherent in all critical transcendentalism, which in turn must be cancelled. Husserl himself seems to have been aware of the hubris. He speaks of the philosopher as urquellend fungierende Subjektivität. The philosopher functions as the primordial source of what can rationally be claimed as objective reality. I come to the conclusion and leave it as a question. Husserl recognizes the fetishism of scientific universality and rationality by uncovering the specific historical practical foundations of pure science. He sees that pure science is in its very structural, technological, at least potentially applied science. The scientific method itself remains dependent on a specific Lebenswelt. This is the hidden irrational element in scientific rationality. Husserl finds the reason for this dependence in the laws of the philosophical dimension, which was originally the basic dimension of science. Classical philosophy defined the method and function of science in terms of an idea of reason which claimed higher truth and validity than those embodied in and established by the given empirical reality. This validating idea of reason was that of the telos of man as man, the realization of humanitas. According to Husserl, the humanistic structure of reason collapses with the release of science from the philosophical foundation. This would imply that humanism becomes an ideology at the very time when modern humanism is born. In other words, the birth hour of humanism itself would be the degradation of humanism them to a mere ideology. Apparently, there must be something wrong with this formulation. The fact remains that humanism is still today an ideology, a higher value which little affects the inhumane character of reality. The question which I would like to conclude is this. Is philosophy entirely innocent of this development, or does it perhaps share the hubris of science? Does it share the reluctance to examine its own real foundation and function? And is it therefore equally guilty of falling the tasks of theoria, of reason, to promote the realization of humanitas?